This time it's complete to Cunningham, and Benny Cunningham is in the end zone for the Bears' first touchdown. Got through the would-be Darius Slay tackle, and Cunningham has his second receiving touchdown of the season.
That's really good out of the backfield. Get it, the ball to them in space. They missed it the play before. Get it to him. He does a nice job. A little out-under move, getting into the end zone. But really a good drive there. I know little too late, but a nice drive, and we keep talking about it. They've got to learn how to do some of these things.
You were kidding, Pete. That's the highlight of Saturday's Bears game against the Lions, a loss 20-10. But there really isn't any plays to pull out. The Bears, they performed uninspired in losing effort, both on the offense and defense side of the ball. They did nothing. Late in the game, Mitchell Trubisky in garbage time threw the ball and maybe set records for himself and got the coach, John Fox, to say arguably his best performance to date. I didn't see it. I don't think any Chicago Bears fan saw it. What we saw was a 4-9 team that was about to be 4-10. Adam Hoge joins us as he does every Monday for the Monday Evening Quarterback. Adam, of course, covers the Bears for WGN Radio. You can find out all his great stuff at WGNRadio.com/Bears. Adam, good to talk with you, buddy.
Hey, Justin.
A lot of energy there, bud. Here we go.
I mean, it's just another one of these games that right when you think they turn the corner, then they deliver another stinker.
I mean, this really was if you're really going to break apart or really break down a stinker, this was it. The Chicago Bears looked lifeless in the first half, and really not till the end of the game, even at the end of the game, weren't in this thing.
Yeah. And for the record, I had this as Trubisky's fourth best game. I keep track of this stuff throughout just from the way I graded out. This came out to his fourth best game. So I didn't agree with John Fox. I thought John Fox, if we're going to really get into this, kind of sounded like a coach who was trying to make the case that he can actually develop Trubisky. Mm. Sitting there in that press conference today, that's kind of how I read a bunch of his answers. It seemed like he was, look, John Fox is many things. Head coach of the Chicago Bears in 2018 is probably not one of them, but he's smart. I mean, he's been around this league long enough to know that this whole job decision over who's going to be head coach of the Bears going forward is really based mostly on the quarterback, right?
Right. And
who can get the most out of the guy that Ryan Pace has bet his job on, and that's Mitch Trubisky. So I thought that John Fox was really trying to make the case today that there's a lot of good things that they've gotten out of Mitch Trubisky, and that's true, actually. But I still don't. I think when you look at his offense, you realize that this is not a great situation for him to be developing in. So I think Fox probably oversold Mitch's performance Saturday in Detroit.
The Lions do not have a great defense. They had a good corner play, and they've got a pass rush in there. But they can be beat. They will have games where people put a lot of points and a lot of numbers up. Mitchell Trubisky, you're right, looked like a step back in the way that the Bears' offense looked dominant. In the first half, I mean, if it wasn't for a fluke fumble, they're shut out. And more often than not, Adam, that's what we're seeing is a Mitchell Trubisky who'll make a nice 3rd and 12 play, and you're like, wow, nice throw. He could throw the ball. But when it comes to actually developing, meaning getting the ball, punching it in the end zone, taking the lead, responding when the other team scores a touchdown, that stuff is far from being figured out with Mitchell Trubisky.
Yeah, what I did like, though, Justin, is after the first interception, he came back and made a really nice throw on the next drive. And he hung in there. Look, there was, I had 13 throws that I thought were really good. Two that were excellent, like elite level type stuff. I mean, when he's backed up at his own 1 yard line,
right.
And I think it was 1st and 17 after a penalty or a negative play, one or the other. There were so many in this game, and he stands back there. He's got the pressure coming in his face. He's standing in his own end zone, and he delivered a strike downfield. That is really, really impressive. But let's put the interceptions aside for a second. There were too many other throws that were inaccurate in this game. And I docked him for all of that. You know, just even short throws that were a little high. Let's go to the one touchdown in this game, Benny Cunningham, right? Threw that. They ran that play two plays in a row.
Yeah, right.
The first one it was open, and Mitch's throw was high. So they went back to it. threw a nice throw, and he got it. So a lot of good, a lot of bad. He looked like a rookie. He looked like a promising rookie to me in this game.
Yeah.
And I feel like I've said that a lot on this show this season, and because that's what he is. He's a guy in a tough situation that I still think is showing a lot of promise, but is having to work out a lot of things on the fly here, and I think that's okay.
Yeah, and I just wonder, Adam, and since we're talking about the offensive side of the ball for a while here, again, the running game is non-existent, like not even NFL level. And the Bears are so Jekyll and Hyde with this all season long, where you'll have announcers that will bend over backwards to compliment the Chicago Bears running game. We talk with Jim Caldwell, and they're so afraid of the Bears running game. And then you see this where, when Jordan Howard even get 20 yards? I mean, at a certain point, every time they handed the ball off, it was a negative play or a one-yarder. I mean, it just seemed to me a very uninspired performance by not just the Bears, not just the quarterback, but the running backs, the offensive line. Across the board had to get failing grades.
But part of it is also the run designs. And this, you know, this is something I tweeted earlier as I was watching the film today. The Bears are too predictable, okay? And it's teams watch film. All right, and there was also – look, I can go into the passing game too. There was one play where Mitch Trubisky looked like a high throw on third down, but really what it was the corner jammed Kendall Wright because they watched the film. They realized that he's the guy they're going to on a slant on third down, and it looked like it was a throw that was 4 yards short of the first down marker, and it was. But in the past, that has worked. That slant has turned into a first down to Kendall Wright, but they're watching the film. Same thing in the running game. Dow Loggins consistently this season has brought his wide receivers from actually being wide receivers and brought them in closer to the offensive line, right? How many of these like bunch formations have we seen where they just hand the ball off? Well, what happens when you bring those wide receivers in, you're essentially bringing extra defenders into the box. They're already loading the box, but now you're bringing cornerbacks and safeties out from the outside where they'd have to cover a wide receiver one-on-one into the box. So that's adding more defenders to stop the run. And as they watch the film and realize, hey, this is what they're doing, I saw it at least three times on film in this game Saturday where those DBs, those defensive backs, were cheating. They were, at the snap, immediately jumping in to stop the run and not even worrying about the wide receiver that they were technically on. That's killing them. And it also led to, like, Josh Bellamy's block in the back penalty came on that exact thing. Because you're asking your wide receivers to block defensive backs who are quick and already getting a jump into the inside. There's no possible way to actually execute that block unless you push them from behind, which is what Josh Bellamy did on one of those plays, and he got flagged for it. But I put that on the offensive coordinator for the play design, not necessarily the player for getting caught for the penalty.
And we're seeing more often, even the announcers in that game, it was interesting, on the interception where Trubisky threw high and the interception on the sideline. They called it out that's the bread and butter play. That's the play that they roll him out left and he's got two options. And it, as you just mentioned, it seems more often than not that that's a pretty predictable play. The defenses are understanding what Loggins is trying to do and therefore what Mitchell Trubisky is trying to do.
Yeah. Are you talking about the interception?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He threw it high. I understand that. But the point I was making is they called it out in the broadcast that is a predictable play for the Bears offense.
And it's also he has struggled rolling to his left and throwing from that. So, he said that's a throw that he'll make 10 out of 10 times next time. Yeah. And I get that. That's the one thing about this game that I'm actually okay with. Mitch had a great quote today, I thought, where he said that he tries to focus more on the process rather than the results. And we were talking about this a little bit in the media room at House Hall today, just me and some of the beat reporters, because some other guys kind of took exception to that, saying, you know, at the end of the game, end of the day, you are judged by your wins and losses. Yeah. You have to care about the results, and I get that. But look, in this position they're in right now, they're 4-10. It really should be about Mitch getting better. So they get put in a tough position here in this game. It wasn't Mitch's fault that they were behind, but he got put in a position where they had to throw a lot. And you're going to make mistakes when you have to throw a lot. But he also made a lot of good throws. So I actually understood where John Fox and Mitch Trubisky were coming from today when they were able to point out some of the positives from this
game. Okay, let me counter that.
Okay.
As a Bears fan and people watching, once again, we complained about this on this very same segment when the Bears lost to the Green Bay Packers. And this was week three or week four where the Bears got blown out, and that was the end of Mike Glennon. There was a play when we were down maybe 34-13 or whatever it was where the Bears went to running the ball and slow, like they did a 9, 10, 11 play drive to march down the field in the fourth quarter where you actually were like, why are you taking this much time? Flash forward to the Detroit Lions game where the Bears are down 20-3 and it's pretty much over. And they pull off a 13-play, 92-yard drive with a couple of third downs and fourth downs. And they had 7-8 minutes to get there. No sense of urgency whatsoever. And I felt like it kind of bit them in the butt because they got the ball back at 20-10, but they had no more time left. And it just, to me, is like, I don't feel the urgency. I don't feel like this team is like, we're going to claw and scratch and we've got the heart and soul and you'll never be able to beat us, not until the buzzer goes. That's not this Chicago Bears team.
Well, part of the problem on that specific drive you're talking about is that the Bears had 5 penalties.
Ugh.
So it's kind of hard to march down the field in 5 plays in, you know, under 2 minutes when you keep killing yourselves with those kinds of penalties. And I'll get back to the fact that Mitch made 3 or 4 incredible throws on that drive just to keep it going when they were behind the chains. But I get your point. Yeah, I understand. I will say the one thing that was frustrating about that specific drive you bring up in Green Bay when it was Mike Glennon, it was kind of like they had just given up.
Yeah, right.
They had kind of given up.
I got
up
the same vibe, man, on Saturday. I got the same vibe that this was Fox going, well, we're not going to win this game. Maybe that doesn't show with like you're talking about with the penalties and everything there. But as a fan, watching a team grind out a 13-play drive when they're down 17 points, You want to shut the game off.
I understand that frustration. Well, in the entire time, this was just an ugly game. It wasn't a pretty game at all. I thought it would be way more competitive after what we saw. I didn't think the Bears were going to win, but I thought after what we saw in Cincinnati that they would come out a lot faster than they did. And unfortunately, that's been a theme this season. You know, just coming out of the bye with that performance against the Packers, against Brett Hundley. That's a game you should have won, and they just came out completely flat.
Adam Hogue, WGN Radio. You can find his stuff at WGNradio.com/Bears. Monday evening quarterback, 312-981-7200. If you want to get in on the conversation, you can text, you can call. What's your thoughts on this 4-10 team? What was your takeaway from the humiliating loss to the Lions on national TV? It's the only national TV we were getting, and we blew it. Adam Hogue with us. We'll take a quick break. Stay with us.
2nd and 8. Here's Trubisky. Ansa pursuing, but he got rid of it. And interception. What a job by Slay. Big play, Darius Slay. Both feet down. Looked like a wide receiver. Interception. And the Lions will take over.
All right. It's a Monday evening quarterback here. 312-981-7200. We're breaking down the Bears' loss to the Detroit Lions on national television on Saturday. Adam Hogue joins us as he does every Monday for the Monday evening quarterback. This, of course, gives us a little bit more nuance to what we saw on the football field. You can find all of Adam's stuff at WGNradio.com/Bears. All right, so some of the texts coming in are about John Fox and the thought and some of the things you talked about right at the beginning about him almost auditioning to be the guy who develops Mitchell Trubisky next year.
Yeah.
And most of the texts that are coming in say, you know, Fox is this, Fox is that. But he doesn't really have a track record for this. And that's the problem I have as a fan, knowing, you know, with the Carolina Panthers, it was a great defense and Jake Delhomme. And with the Broncos, it was a great defense and Tim Tebow. And we'll take Peyton Manning out of the mix because he essentially was the coach. This is not his forte. He's not a guy who develops quarterbacks or seems to even care about quarterbacks.
Right. I mean, the most success he's had was when Peyton Manning was his quarterback. Or when Jake Delhomme, you know, Jake Delhomme is really an outlier. But he wasn't a guy that was really developed, right? So the one guy that you point to that the Carolina Panthers drafted was Jimmy Clausen out of Notre Dame, and he didn't do anything. He turned out to be a bust. eventually took Jay Cutler's job.
I guess he took
Chicago for
I
one
guess
week.
Who he didn't draft Tim Tebow? Did he? He just came in to deal with him.
Yeah, I believe he inherited him. I think Tebow was it may have been Tebow.
The guy Josh McDaniels got?
Oh, yeah, that was Josh McDaniels who drafted him. Yeah, yeah. So he inherited Tim, and I don't think that John Fox was very fond of Tim Tebow. Some of the stories I've heard the last few years, that was just a thing kind of out of necessity.
And maybe you
give him some credit for making the playoffs with Tim Tebow, actually winning a playoff game with Tim Tebow. But your original point is correct. He does not have a track record of developing quarterbacks at all. The one opportunity he had was Jimmy Clausen, and stunningly at the NFL Combine this year, John Fox admitted that he never even watched Jimmy Clausen's tape before they drafted him.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I don't think he wanted Jimmy Clausen.
All right, let's keep going in that area when we talk about coaching staff. Let's go to Jesse. Jesse, you're on the Monday Evening Quarterback. What's your question for Adam?
Yeah, hey, guys. I wanted to hear what your thoughts were on Greg Gabriel's slew of tweets. I don't know if you saw him, but he was talking about how Dow Loggins was kind of talking himself up. He almost like reported to some friends and to some sources possibly that he was kind of touting himself as the next Bears head coach.
Hmm.
And this is coming from the guy who was obviously, you know, an NFL scout for 30 years. And I'm pretty sure he was like leading the Bears scouting department for like 10 years, if I'm not mistaken.
What do you think about that idea, Adam, the Dow Loggins head coach rumors?
Yeah, so I have the exact tweet from Greg Gable in front of me, actually. And Greg was the Bears director of college scouting in the Jerry Angelo era. And he tweeted during the game on Saturday. I saw this at the time. He said, was told weeks ago that Loggins believed and was telling people that he was going to be the Bears head coach in 2018. What a dreamer. Couldn't be the head coach of a high school JV team.
Greg Gabriel bringing the sass.
Yeah, I've gotten to know Greg a little bit the last few years now that he's a member of the media, and I think he does a great job with the NFL draft, and he can get kind of testy during games on Twitter, which I enjoy. I enjoy from Greg. Look, I don't know. I'm sure that he was told this, and it's, you know, there's probably some credibility to the fact that maybe Loggins. Well, I'm going to trust Greg on this. Greg has a lot of great sources and knows a lot of people in the league. So at some point, Loggins probably did believe that if John Fox
wanted the job, right, whatever.
Right,
yeah.
And you know what? He probably said that to somebody who thought he was just as crazy as probably everyone else does, just seeing this tweet from Greg Gabriel, and that's probably why it got around. So, I'm not going to fault Dow Loggins for having confidence in himself and believing that someday he'll be a head coach. I think we can all agree, though, he's not going to be the head coach of the Bears in 2018.
I mean, you can understand where we're heading in this idea that you would think that the next coach of the Chicago Bears, if it's not going to be Foxy, if he's not going to stick around, is going to be offensive-minded in the way that you're looking for someone who has a history or a chemistry with Mitchell Trubisky?
Yeah, so there's a couple interesting ways to look at this. I mean, the plus side of bringing in an offensive head coach is that you at least know that that guy's always going to be there if you guys have success, right? Mm-hmm. The problem with not having an offensive head coach is if he brings in a great coordinator that does a great job with Mitch Trubisky, that guy's going to get hired as a head coach elsewhere, right? Just look at the 1 year of Adam Gase.
Right.
And he had some great results with Jay Cutler, immediately got hired away.
So just get an offense, get a head coach who calls the plays.
Well, not necessarily, but just somebody that you know if the coordinator does get hired away, you can always depend on the head coach to still be, you know, linked together.
Isn't that kind of the situation in Philadelphia, right, with Doug Peterson? Like, he's the guy who's the everyone loves there. He's the OC, or he's the head coach. He's also got an offensive mind, right? And everyone else can leave. It won't matter. They still have him and Carson Wentz, right?
Right. Mike McCarthy with Aaron Rodgers, and of course, you know, Bill Belichick with Tom Brady. I mean, these are now Sean McVay with Jared Goff. I mean, these are, I think we've seen a pattern over the last 20 years in the NFL of the winning franchises having a great quarterback, but not only a great quarterback, one that is linked together with the head coach. But I also, and I've been saying this for weeks now, just we know better now in Chicago because Phil Emery tried this. He tried to bring in Mark Trestman and be. He tried this formula. The one thing that Phil Emery saw correctly was that he had to develop this. Unfortunately, right. He just hired the wrong head coach and he had the wrong quarterback. So
we see that as fans, right? I would, as a longtime Chicago Bears fan, I would see that as an anomaly, a bad choice to get a guy from the Canadian Football League. I wouldn't throw the baby out with the bathwater. I would go after another offensive coordinator to link with a young quarterback, because think about it. You had Trestman, who was writing books on philosophy, and Jay Cutler. I don't know how they thought that was going to work, where they would link together. It didn't. But I think that a young Mitchell Trubisky and a young offensive coordinator who becomes head coach, I think there could be something there. Although, right, I love the defense, but yeah.
Right. Well, what I was getting at really is that the guy has to be able to be a head coach too.
Right, right. Yeah,
that's what all these other guys that I've mentioned have proven that they can do. You have to be able to manage a locker room. You have to be able to manage a whole team. You can hire a great coordinator and say, all right, you go coach the defense. I'm going to worry about the offense. But you still have to be the CEO of the locker room. Mark Trestman couldn't do that at the NFL level. He somehow managed to do that at the Canadian Football League. Good for him. But it was an absolute disaster with the personalities they had in the locker room at Hallis Hall for those 2 years. It just completely fell apart. So go get an offensive guy, great. But he also has to be able to be a head coach, first and foremost.
Well, hey, I got a great idea. Ron Rivera. Let's bring him back, defensive coordinator, head coach, whatever it is. Bring him back, because all the weird stuff that's going on in Carolina, boom, everybody's happy. The 85 Bears crew is happy. Everybody's happy.
Yeah.
And bring Cam Newton, too. Do a trade for Trubisky and Cam Newton. We're
I wouldn't completely rule out that Ron Rivera might end up being available out of all this.
I know he's a defensive coordinator first, but there's just something there where you're like, yeah, let's get one of these guys. All right, here's what we'll do. Let's take a quick break so we can get the news with Rob. We'll come back to Monday Evening Quarterback. I got a lot of texts to get to as well. 312-981-7200 if you'd like to call in or text. Talk to Adam Hoge about the Bears and what we do with the last two games of the season. All right, stay with us.
Really down three starters if you think of Kyle Long not being in the mix at the moment right now because he's on IR. Trubisky fires sideline. What a throw in time. Kendall Wright, yeah, right around the 40-yard line. Good throw and catch.
Come on, man. I love it, Pete. We're getting third and eights. That's where we're at on the highlights from Saturday's loss. The Bears lose to the Lions, go to 4-10. Maybe because the San Francisco 49ers have found their quarterback in Jimmy Garoppolo, maybe that means that they'll hopscotch the Bears and we'll get better draft picks. Oh, joy. Oh, joy. Adam Hoge, of course, covers the Bears here at WGN Radio, wgnradio.com/Bears. You can find all his great stuff. Joins us for the Monday Evening Quarterback, 312-981-7200. We're having fun before about this become a pastime for Bears fans to think about who the next coach is going to be. It's not a good thing to kind of wonder about. But I kind of enjoy the idea of thinking about the offensive coordinators that are coming up, or maybe some of these sidelines. You always hear John Gruden's name thrown around when it comes to new coaching. What do we hear about the coaching carousel and whether or not there are names that Chicago Bears fans should be looking at?
Well, I'll give you one name that just intrigues me. I haven't heard anything about this, but it is somebody to watch who is currently a head coach in the league. And we just had a discussion in the last segment about Ron Rivera because it's just an interesting situation out there in Carolina with the ownership change. And they look like they're going to make the playoffs, but what if they bottom out here in the next couple weeks? Could be interesting. But another name is Bill O'Brien in Houston. Bill O'Brien has been there for, I think, 5 years now.
Yeah.
Made the playoffs a few times, really based on their defense and a weak AFC South division, if we're being honest.
Right.
But he is an offensive guy who is kind of known for, you know, he was in New England before he took the Penn State job. And he did a great job at Penn State, considering the circumstances he inherited after the Paterno-Sandusky scandal. It was pretty amazing what he did there just to keep that program afloat, which is why he got the NFL job he did. But in Houston, they have struggled to find him a quarterback. Now, I think he deserves some of that blame because he's part of the evaluation that goes into these quarterbacks. But time after time after time, whether it's Brock Osweiler,
yeah,
or these other Tom Savage, some of these other guys that have been going through there, it's been ugly. And that's been their problem. And now they're 4-10, tied with the Bears for a record. And I wouldn't be surprised if they make a head coaching change at the end of the year. But I'll tell you what. When Deshaun Watson was playing earlier this season,
they looked good.
Bill O'Brien looked like a pretty good head coach,
yeah.
Didn't he?
Yeah.
And I still think he is a good head coach. If you look at how they've maintained a good defense, that's an encouraging sign.
With
you
a lot, want, of, like, in, which, lot of injuries, yeah.
I think his players play hard for him. I think they respect him. So in that conversation we just had in the last segment about, yes, you want an offensive guy. You want somebody that can be married to Mitch Trubisky. You also need somebody that can actually manage a locker room and keep the defense going. And I like Bill O'Brien as a coach. That's just somebody to keep an eye on if he doesn't keep his job in Houston.
He'd be much more interesting at Halas Hall for press conferences and stuff. He's got an interesting personality. I'm not sure, because I remember watching this season of Hard Knocks. They did the Houston Texans. That could be interesting. Let's go to Pat. Pat, you're on the Monday Evening Quarterback. What's your question for Adam?
Yeah, I was thinking about the offensive coordinator for Detroit, Jim Bob Cooter. Mm-hmm. Who has to know the division the Bears are in? You could get 6 wins right there and pull off 4 other wins. You get a 10-win season right off the bat.
Yeah, what about Jim Bob Cooter, the weirdest name in NFL?
Yeah, I know we'd have a lot of fun with it here in Chicago. It's an interesting name. I think you would kind of make the comparisons to Sean McVay because of the age. Jim Bob Cooter is only 33 years old, so he'd be very, very young. Not quite as young as Sean McVay, who I believe just turned 32, but he was hired when he was 31. And he's getting a lot of credit for the job he's done with Matthew Stafford, who for many years, Stafford's always been in that category of guys you love in terms of the potential and the talent, but he also had plenty of mistakes. There were comparisons to Jay Cutler a lot. And really, in the last couple seasons, there's just no denying Stafford's a good quarterback now. And Cooter's getting a lot of that credit. So I would just go back to, okay, he's young. Can he manage the locker room? You're kind of taking a chance there, promoting him all the way to head coach. But I can understand why people are talking about him.
Yeah, there's a lot of great names. That the LA Rams came up, and we kind of talked about this last week, Adam, that the idea, the 773 kind of ingests as, can we get the Rams to come to Chicago? We need a second team. But but there's something to be said that, you know, everybody's got their eyes on the LA Rams or maybe the Philadelphia Eagles because of the last year having terrible years and being able to, you know, flip a switch. And with a new coach or with new blood, whatever it is, the same personnel essentially be able to turn into a playoff team and a dominant dominant regular season team right now, where the Rams are the Rams and the Eagles are just beating people.
Yeah, it's a copycat league, and everyone wants to figure out these Sean McVay, Jared Goff, Doug Peterson, Carson Wentz type situations, and I'm sure that's what Ryan Pace is thinking a lot about right now. And this is all, of course, assuming that Ryan Pace is coming back, which I believe he is. Mm. Now, let me give you one scenario. This is really the only scenario I can imagine. I think it's far-fetched for this franchise right now. But it is a scenario. One national NFL writer that I recommend reading on a weekly basis is Ben Volen, who writes for the Boston Globe. And every Sunday, he has an NFL notes column that's always interesting and full of good nuggets. And one of the things they're watching in New England right now is Josh McDaniels, Josh McDaniels is another name that he could have had a head coaching job last year, but he decided to stay in New England. Now, what I didn't know until reading Ben Volen's notes this week was that he was interviewing in conjunction with Nick Caserio. Nick Caserio is basically Bill Belichick's right-hand man.
Is that the guy with the big beard on the sideline?
No, that's Matt Patricia, defensive coordinator.
Yeah, okay. The guy that just looks like a bigger version of Belichick.
Yeah, I mean, Nick Caserio is basically the Patriots GM, except Belichick's the GM too. You know what I mean? So he's in the front office. So basically, they were interviewing last year as a package deal. Hmm. GM, head coach. And they apparently, according to the story I read in the Boston Globe, were offered the 49ers job together. So Caserio would have been the GM, and Josh McDaniels would have been the head coach. But this is crazy. Part of the reason why they didn't take that job is they didn't like the quarterback situation, and they didn't think that they could get Jimmy Garoppolo away from Bill Belichick. These are the guys that are working with Belichick. So, you know, these reports that have been out there that Belichick was just not going to trade Garoppolo last offseason, if his own right-hand man and offensive coordinator did not think that they could take Garoppolo with them to San Francisco or get him at all, and they were willing to turn down promotions for that in a brand new job, that tells you a lot.
Yeah, it does.
But if those two are interviewing together and there have to be a package deal or it's not going to happen and the Bears really want to pull off something like that, that's pretty much the only scenario where I could see Ryan Pace getting kicked out the door. I think that's very far-fetched. I think Pace will probably stay, and the Josh McDaniels thing is just not going to happen.
I mean, what are we talking about? This would be year four or year three for Pace coming up here? So he would be in the point that there's a lot of evaluation coming up on the results that he has put on the field.
Yeah, I mean, there's 2 years left on his contract. He signed a 5-year deal. John Fox only signed a 4-year deal, which was interesting and something that we reported at the time. So that's partly why it's easier to get rid of Fox right now, because you only have to pay out 1 year, whereas Pace is still on the hook for two.
Yeah,
and you know, I wrote about this last week, Justin. Don't know if you saw it, but my big piece in the middle of last week was the case for Ryan Pace.
Yeah, right.
And it wasn't really like I was shelling for him, like, hey, you got to bring this guy back. It was more so, hey, look, here's literally everything he's done in 3 years. Here's the whole ledger. You can read it for yourself and figure it out. But my own conclusion after I laid it all out was there's more good than bad, and there's reason to believe this team can turn the corner next year, and I think he deserves at least one more talent acquisition cycle in this offseason.
312-981-7200 is a phone number. 630 says, bring back Dave Taub. His name gets thrown around, I think, because we love Devin Hester so much.
But you know what? That's another name I was going to bring up that
really?
I have.
I mean, do you see a lot of jumps from special team coordinators to head coach?
No, and in fact, John Harbaugh is the one that everyone talks about, but John Harbaugh had to become a defensive coordinator before he actually got promoted to head coach. So it just doesn't happen, but I don't understand why it doesn't happen more. What people don't realize is special teams coordinators, first of all, they work with both the offense and the defensive players.
Right.
But because of their duties being so specialized into special teams, that's why it's called that, they often are given extra head coaching responsibilities, sort of as an assistant head coach, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. For instance, here in Chicago, Jeff Rogers, the Bears special teams coordinator, handles a lot of the day-to-day stuff, like practice schedules and just making sure everything gets run correct. And that's relatively common throughout the league. So in terms of just knowing what goes into being a head coach on a day-to-day basis, which I think doesn't get talked about enough, when coaches just sort of fail and they never make that transition from being a good coordinator to a good head coach, it's partly because all that time they spend grinding and watching film and coming up with schemes, they don't realize how much of time consumption it takes to just be a head coach, to manage an entire team. So that's why I like the idea of special teams coordinators becoming head coaches, because I think that they, in that regard, they actually have more experience than some of these hotshot young coordinators that end up getting hired.
Yeah.
And I don't know why it doesn't happen more often. And the other thing in Dave Taub's case that I like, he knows his Bears organization inside and out. And I think that's something that can work in his favor.
Yeah. Yeah. We definitely like, I think fans do like when there's connection to the coach. That's when Ron Rivera comes up and you're like, oh yeah, 85 Bear. Or Taub, where you're like, oh yeah, Devin Hester. I mean, there's no doubt. I mean, I would think, is there any chance that the Bears, remember, it was maybe in the 90s, they kind of botched this a little bit, where there was thought that perhaps a Mike Singletary or a former Bear was coming up the ranks, or maybe he'd be a good coordinator and didn't work out. Like, I forgot Jerron was going to hire him or something like that. Is there any chance that are any former Glory Bears in coaching? You know, Leslie Frazier is still a coaching, right? I mean, but any connection to the old stat or the old team that would be worth considering?
I think we talked about the two guys that really would be.
Taub and Rivera, huh?
Yeah, I think Ron Rivera, if he became available, would I'm sure the McCaskey family would want him. I don't know what kind of connections he has to Ryan Pace, and it's still going to be Pace's call.
Yeah.
Same thing with Taub. I mean, Taub has strong connections with Chris Ballard, the GM in Indianapolis, so I would think he gets a hard look there because the Colts are probably changed. That's the other thing about this, Justin. You look right now across the league, how many teams might be changing head coaches?
Right.
You know, usually seven's kind of the magic number every year, somewhere around seven teams. I think it's going to be at least double digits, and it might be up to like 12. It's going to be a crazy head coaching year, and those are all... That's kind of why, that's something I talked about a few weeks ago when I talked about letting Fox go in the middle of the year. you could jump out in front of this thing and start lining your ducks up, and you can't quite start interviews yet with NFL coaches, but you can start getting your ducks in a row. And so that's just something to keep in mind. One other name, I don't know if it's too soon for this, but I don't know if you saw in New York, but Josh McCown's hurt now.
Mm-hmm.
Josh McCown, I know just from interviewing and getting to know him here when he was the quarterback, would be a great coach.
Oh, he's,
I don't know
if he goes to do it.
Yeah, I don't know if that's what he wants to do, but they're already making him a player coach type situation. This past weekend, he did that. I don't know if he can jump to being head coach right now, but maybe that's somebody you think about as an offensive coordinator.
Or a quarterback's coach or something like that.
Absolutely.
Adam Hogue on the line, 312-981-7200. We're getting some good texts in. Bring back Shoop. That's always a good one. Vince Tobin. 815's got a great one. Couldn't agree more with you guys when it comes to the Bears. No sense of urgency, no fire under anyone's butt. Maybe an occasional defensive lineman play that fires them up. Poor clock management, and for goodness sake, let Mitchell Trubisky throw it down the field. Here's my question to that. Those defensive linemen, tomorrow the Pro Bowl selections come out. Are the Bears going to be shut out again, or does Akeem Hicks have a chance to play for the team? And last year, I guess they didn't get shut out because 17 guys got hurt, and they're like, give it to Jordan Howard or whatever it was.
Yeah, and I'm not even sure. Here's the interesting thing. If you were to ask me who should be the Pro Bowler, if you had to pick one guy in the entire team and it could only be one, it would definitely be Akeem Hicks. And by the way, Akeem Hicks played great on Saturday. I just got done grading the film. He was outstanding. And he had a sack, and there was one play. I'm hoping to get the gif of it up on Twitter later, at Adam Hogue on Twitter, where he just bull rushed a guy straight backwards into and it tripped the running back. So he essentially made the tackle just by running over his own guy and pushing him into the running back. Those types of plays are great. So I think Hicks should be. I'm skeptical he will be, though, because he doesn't really have the sack numbers. But what people forget, he's not going to win the fan vote. I'm not sure he wins the player vote. I hope there's enough coaches out there, because it's a three-part deal and how these guys make the Pro Bowl. I hope enough coaches out there are appreciating what Akeem Hicks is doing this year. Because if you turn on the film and you go through it, he has been dominant in almost every game, maybe one or two where he's had kind of a quiet game, but he's been great. I just think Howard probably gets more. They just look at the stats and go, oh, he's up at the top of the league in rushing. And he has. So I think it's more likely that Howard gets in than Hicks, but it really should be Hicks.
Yeah, I agree. It seems like the only player. I think Danny Trevathan's had a great year. He's been hurt, and he had the suspension as well. And I'm not advocating that he be in the Pro Bowl. But he, when you talk about who the gamers, you know, we talked that great text that came in about No Heart, you know, from 815. Who are the gamers on the squad? That I'm not talking about their best running in practice or you know, what their value is, but they show up around the ball. And Akeem Hicks, Danny Trevathan, Leonard Floyd, and Pernell McPhee also play that way. Lamar, and I got to give a little credit to Lamar Houston.
Oh, yeah.
As a guy that came off the waiver wire, he has a knack. What, two more sacks in that game yesterday? I mean, again, it's all slop. It's all garbage time at this point, but it is interesting to see that Lamar Houston has got, I mean, he's getting his number called a lot.
But he's playing for his NFL life right now, and he's looking like a guy who shouldn't have been cut in the first place this year.
Yeah, right. Again, and you know, Adam, we were on talking about this. He had, and I remember he got hurt, right?
Mm-hmm.
He got hurt at the end of preseason, but in that game in which he was on the bubble, I think it was against Cleveland.
Yeah.
He was a monster.
He got
hurt in that game, and it was like, and they cut him for injury or whatever, but there was a great, I mean, he was a guy that we were thinking big things from.
What's interesting is that the Texans cut him, too. Like, I sort of understand why the Bears cut him. He had been hurt so many times, and here you go again. Could you really depend on him a few weeks? Because they would have had to carry him on the 53 roster for a few weeks while he recovered. Because he was out the first few weeks. Then he signs with Houston. They ended up cutting him. So, I mean, of course, they have a lot more depth on their talent on their defense than the Bears do. But, I think here's another interesting name. It's too bad he got hurt early in the year. But I think that Sherrick McManus was actually on pace for a Pro Bowl as a special teamer. Mm-hmm. He was close last year. He was a Pro Bowl alternate. A lot of people don't realize that. and he didn't get in there. But that was a goal of his this year, and he was playing outstanding early in the season before he got hurt, and has been good the last couple weeks again. But I just think that those games he missed are probably going to be the difference. Yeah. Between he was out for,
you know, the other name that is so intriguing to me, because we've seen flashes, and I would say that Eddie Jackson, the safety for the Chicago Bears, has what, two of the three best plays of the entire season, all in one game against Baltimore or whatever it was.
Yeah,
or one of the Carolina, whatever one that they won.
This is the Carolina game,
yeah. Where he returned a fumble and an interception for a touchdown. For all of that, what he does, and you're like, oh, great, finally, some life. He is maddening and frustrating as a cover guy. The game changed, and the Bears lost that game when they let Matthew Stafford roll out, and he threw a bomb in the, I think it was the second quarter,
yeah.
And Eddie Jackson had position for an interception. And once again, and I don't know where, if it's in the water at Halas Hall, but they're almost afraid to pick the ball off. He let the guy stand in front of him on a busted play. And it was a 50-yard. It put the Lions in scoring position to essentially put the game away so early. And I don't know what's up. I thought he was brought in to be a guy who was around the ball, a ball hawk who could understand. And this is the second time I've seen him do that, because there was, I forgot what game it was, and we complained about it here, where there was a deep ball and it looked like he had a pick and he let the receiver get it. I forgot what it was. I think it was Green Bay, maybe. But yeah. The point being, it was like, what is up with that? That is so infuriating as a Bears fan.
I mean, there's so many things infuriating about that whole situation there. Okay, it starts with John Fox punting on 4th and 1 at
his
own 45.
Yes.
When first and foremost, we throw out all the other situations where he's done that. We know that's his MO. Fine. But in this situation, your defense had been on the field pretty much the entire game at that point. You needed to extend that drive just to keep them off the field, and he punts, puts them back out there. They were tired. Why did Matthew Stafford get out in the first place on that play you're talking about? Because the guys were tired. They actually got a decent rush, but they couldn't. Akeem Hicks just couldn't quite get to him. Flushed him out to the side. As soon as that happened, that's when crazy things happened. And he's able to get out because the defense was tired. Throws the ball up. It's just a jump ball at that point. If it gets intercepted, he doesn't care. It's like a punt.
Yeah.
Okay. Eddie Jackson, you're absolutely right. So after all those things happened, and I think they have to be pointed out, you get to the actual play, and Eddie Jackson, I think he thought it was just his ball and that there was no one else there. I don't know how else to explain it, because you're right. He didn't seem to realize that Marvin Jones was right there to undercut him and make the play, because he was just trying to catch the ball.
Yeah.
And I do think he has good hands, but he needs to have more awareness in those types of situations, and he'll get that with more experience. But that was that whole tough sequence. I agree with you. That was the game right there. And it started with John Fox punting, and it ended that sequence with, you know, a touchdown after that big play by Matthew Stafford.
Hmm. 4-10, like I said, the Niners have kind of pushed ahead of the Bears, meaning that the Bears have a better draft pick because they lost to the Niners and they have the same record now. Where are we? I mean, are we inching with this loss to go to 4-10? Are we inching back into lotto pick top five area when it comes to the NFL draft next year?
Well, the problem is I believe they're at number 6 right now if the season ended today, but they still have played such a tough schedule this year. And that's
right.
The tiebreak.
It hurts them, right?
It doesn't matter that they lost to the 49ers. It is the 49ers are getting the better pick right now because of the strength of schedule. And
that's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah.
Don't you think that's ridiculous if you two teams played each other and the one team that lost gets a less? That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it seems like the team that loses should get the better pick in a head-to-head situation.
Just like a catch is a catch. And so what, did the ball came out at the end of that Pittsburgh?
Oh, man. I could have done half the hour on that situation.
We're not. It's like, as a Bears fan, I'm like, I don't care about other controversies in the NFL right now. I don't care. it's Bears or nothing, but it's just, right. Yeah, right. But, yeah, so the Bears, I mean, they go into Cleveland comes to Soldier Field on Sunday, Christmas Eve. My Facebook feed is full of two tickets. Anyone want to get rid of these tickets?
Yeah.
I mean, there's you know, Rosenblatt was talking about, you know, whether or not they should boycott the game, fans should do a no-show. I mean, is there any feel about that, about the idea that this is the last home game at Soldier Field for a team that Bears fans are not happy with?
Yeah, I don't think there'll be a boycott or anything like that, but I think it'll be a lot like last year's game against Washington on Christmas Eve. I'm trying to see if I can get that attendance right now for you, because I remember there was a ton of empty seats in Soldier Field for that game. I'm not seeing it at the second, but I think it'll be similar, where there was, okay, they said the paid attendance was almost 58,000.
Yeah,
there's no way.
Paid's way different than who shows up.
So. Yeah, I want to say, and that's well below actually sellout, just at 58. So in terms of people in their seats, it must have been in the 30s. And I would imagine something similar, because the weather's supposed to be really cold too. It was actually warm on Christmas Eve last year, if you remember. It's going to be really cold on Sundays. So you're going to go see them play the Browns in the freezing cold on Christmas Eve. If you're looking for tickets on the cheap right now, because there's probably some people out there that want to get in cheap and know they can, I would wait. Because like you just said, Justin, I think people are being giving these things away.
I've been buttering up the wife to be like, you know, it'd be a fun Christmas Eve thing to do. And then and she ain't having it.
Hey, she's not right. It. It's not going to be fun, Justin. Not let your brain trick you into thinking it's going to be fun. You're going to be cold. You're going to be watching a bad football game. Don't let it happen.
Adam Hogue, of course, the man who covers the Chicago Bears for WGN. Find all his stuff at WGNradio.com/Bears. And, of course, the Monday Evening Quarterback. I think this is our last one, because we'll be out Christmas and New Year's. So we'll have to check in right after the new year on how the final two games went. Adam, a pleasure. Happy holidays, and thanks for joining us, man.
You too. Happy holidays, Justin.